Radio Prague News.
Jiří Paroubek has been re-elected as the leader of the Social Democrats at the party's annual conference in Brno. The Czech Minister of the Interior has appointed a temporary successor to Vladislav Husák as the head of the Czech police. And Prague's mayor has taken 2 months' leave and left the Czech capital to climb Mount Everest. Social Democrat chairman Jiří Paroubek was re-elected as the party's leader at its annual conference in Brno on Friday evening. He received 60% of the delegates' votes, a total which was significantly less than the 92% support he received when first elected last May. Mr. Paroubek was the only person standing for the post. Speaking at the conference, Jiří Paroubek said the Social Democrats had to modernise in order to win the next election. He said that the party needed to appeal more to younger and middle-aged people, and also called for more women to be put on its list of candidates, which he described as a sign of the party's modern thinking. Interior Minister Ivan Langer has announced that Police Chief Vladislav Husák, who resigned amid corruption allegations on Friday, will be temporarily replaced by Deputy Police Chief Jan Brazda. Mr. Brazda, who previously worked as the Deputy Director of the West Bohemian Police Administration, will take up his new post on April 1st. He has been the Deputy Head of the Police since January 2006 and came to the attention of the general public last year when he headed the Czech police team sent to the Football World Cup to help competition organisers with security arrangements concerning Czech fans. Prague's mayor, Pavel Bem, departed the Czech capital on Saturday morning for the Himalayas, where he will attempt to climb Mount Everest. The mayor, who is a keen mountaineer, has taken 2 months unpaid leave in order to try and climb the world's highest peak. He had earlier been heavily criticised in some quarters for taking so much time off from his duties as Prague mayor to do this. Czech and German police have arrested 126 suspected German football hooligans ahead of Saturday's international Euro 2008 qualifying match between the Czech Republic and Germany in Prague. Around 3,000 German football fans are expected to travel to Prague for Saturday's match. Czech police also expect between 500 and 1,000 hooligans to come to the Czech capital for the sole purpose of causing trouble. They have been given a list of these people by their German counterparts. Finally, the weather, and it's expected to be cloudy to overcast with occasional showers. Highest temperatures should range between 7 and 11 degrees Celsius. You can find all these stories and more on our website at radio.cz. I'm Colin O'Connor, and that's the end of the news.
Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 10099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Hello and welcome to Insight Central Europe. I'm Kerry Skyring with stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia and the Czech Republic. And this week, as the EU celebrates its half century, we ask, what next? And we look at what it meant to be shut out of Europe for half a century. We'll take a look at some price tags in Slovenia, the newest member of the Eurozone, and ask, are Hungarians xenophobic? These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. But first, here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thank you, Kerry. Hungary's President Laszlo Sólyom says Hungary supports Poland and the Czech Republic on the possible deployment of elements of the US anti-missile shield on their territory. He was speaking at the start of a three-day official visit to Poland on Thursday. Mr. Sólyom met his Polish counterpart Lech Kaczyński for discussions on Polish-Hungarian relations and European issues, including the Berlin Declaration and the future of the EU Constitutional Treaty. Asked about Hungary's stand on the US anti-missile shield, he said Hungary is backing the system. Both presidents also said the Visegrad countries should cooperate more actively. The Visegrad group is made up of Poland, Hungary, Slovakia and the Czech Republic. Slovenia's left-wing opposition parties say they're outraged at revelations the government sought secret files from the Slovenian Intelligence Service, or SOVA. The opposition accuses the government of having no legal right to the data and is demanding to know why it used a confidential decree to gain access. The affair was brought to light by the Ljubljana daily Dnevnik. The government has confirmed it has set up a working group to analyze the past operations of the intelligence services. Opposition leaders in Slovakia are calling for the resignation of Economy Minister Lubomír Jahnátek over remarks he made on corruption in the arms trade. In an interview with the weekly Trend, Jahnátek said that Slovak firms, both government-owned and private, should learn how to officially account for bribes that would allow for the sale of Slovak arms to some developing countries where corruption is unavoidable. Jahnátek also labelled bribes as non-traditional forms of sale that really work. And finally, former Czech president and human rights activist Václav Havel has taken part in a one-day hunger strike in solidarity with a Kurdish businessman who's trying to clear his name in a Czech court. In 1994, Dr. Jekta Uzunoglu was accused of torturing, kidnapping, robbing and attempting to murder two Turkish nationals living in the Czech Republic. He spent 2.5 years on remand in police custody until he was suddenly released with no explanation. Several renowned Czech figures, including Mr. Havel and actors Zdeněk Svěrák, have pledged solidarity with Mr. Uzunoglu, who's been trying to clear his name since 1995.
Thanks, Dieter. The European Union is celebrating its half century. It was 50 years ago that the Treaty of Rome was signed by 6 countries who wanted to break down some trade barriers. 50 years later, the EU has 27 member states, free trade, a passport-free zone, a common currency, and is talking about its own army. 50th birthday celebrations in Berlin include the signing of the Declaration of Berlin, reflecting upon the EU's achievements and hoping to point the way out of a crisis over the constitutional treaty. So just how far has the EU come and where should it go next? Rob Cameron invited 2 people with very different views on EU integration to discuss just that. Tomáš Jiža, a young centre-right activist and advisor to Prague's mayor, Pavel Bem, and Martin Šabu from the Czech NGO Yes for Europe.
We were already celebrating. On Tuesday we had here a big conference with Václav Havel, former president, European commissioners, former ministers of foreign affairs from France. So we already have celebrated this anniversary. But I think any time there is a chance to remind us what was the founding ideas which created this unique organization are necessary to be celebrated.
Tomáš, will you be cracking open the champagne on Sunday?
I wouldn't go that far to say that I would be cracking a bottle of champagne on Sunday. I would rather say that this celebration is a coin that has 2 sides. I think on one hand, I would celebrate, and I think it of it as a positive of the European Union, that we have 50 years of relative stability and peace in Europe. On the other hand, the recent developments in the European Union are not as I would expect them to be, as we see the economic performance, as we see the political situation in the whole European Union. So there are positives of the 50 years of existence of the European Union, but I see negatives in recent developments.
Do you think the positives outweigh the negatives, Martin? Are there more positives than negatives?
It seems at the moment that there are more negative news on the EU, which creates a general feeling among the public and audience that there is something wrong going on in the EU.
And do you think there is something wrong with the EU now?
We came to the moment where the EU cannot simply be an economic union. It has to have a certain political dimension.
Sorry, Tomáš, I can see you shaking your head there.
It's not even in the very basics of the European Union that were created 50 years ago. I think the 4 freedoms, that's perfect with me, but what's going on now, that we see everything that's above these 4 freedoms and everything, all the political constructions as the European Constitution, that is what creates a very negative reaction throughout the European citizens all over the Europe.
Right, so Tomáš is saying that it's because they're trying to make it more than an economic union that's causing those negative feelings, Martin.
Back to the roots, let's go back to 1993 when Mr. Klaus has sent his application for having chance to enter the EU. It was already political union because it was already signed the Maastricht Treaty, and everybody knew that there is a certain political aspect involved in the discussion and nobody could neglect it.
I think political union is reasonable to a certain extent. I agree that the Maastricht Treaty was some kind of a cornerstone that basically changed the direction. And we can see that last 14 years, the Europe is going far away from its citizens.
You are right, but I see the start at the 50s already. But what I have to agree with you is that there are feelings that Europe is very far from their citizens. But it's based on the fact that the politicians are not able to really decide whether really we want to be a to have political union. And of course, if you create an atmosphere of neglecting things, an atmosphere that certain issues are not clear, and it's not clear what are the powers of the national capitals and what are the powers of the supranational bodies, then you come into troubles and you can create many myths about the European Union, how bureaucratic it is, how far from citizens it is, even though there are many advantages inside in it.
Martin Szabó and Tomáš Jirsa, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Tomáš Jirsa, a young centre-right activist and advisor to Prague's mayor, Pavel Bem, and Martin Szabó from the Czech NGO Yes for Europe. They were speaking to Rob Cameron at Radio Prague. Well, it's not just in Berlin and Rome that the EU birthday is being marked. In Poland, which joined the EU only 3 years ago, the anniversary is a cause for reflection on the historical experience of a nation which for decades was not able to participate in the process of European integration. Here's Michal Kubicki of Polish Radio's External Service.
In a resolution to mark the 50th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome, the Polish Parliament describes European integration as the best guarantor of the continent's peace, security and prosperity. It also says that it was only after the Solidarity Revolution and the collapse of communism that Poles could contribute to the integration process. Many analysts and ordinary Poles stress that the anniversary should be marked not only by praising past achievements, but also by recalling the dark chapters of Europe's recent history, notably communism. The so-called historic memory of Europe, they say, should include the plight of the countries which remained for many years under the Soviet domination. Jacek Kucharczyk of the Institute of Public Affairs in Warsaw.
I think it's quite important because the division into old and new members within the EU is still persisting. It's partly based, obviously, on different levels of economic development, but also on sometimes on the assumption that the countries that were there from the start have some greater wisdom and should have more to say about European future. That's a wrong position, that we should insist that we are all equal now within the EU, and that our historical experience should be equally taken into consideration.
According to Jacek Kucharczyk, this has also important present-day implications.
The EU should understand that Polish misgivings about the directions that Russia is taking now are not a product of Polish sort of Russophobia, but they are legitimate concerns stemming from our historical experience.
Poland has certain reservations about the wording of the Berlin Declaration. It has long insisted, for instance, on references to Christianity to be included in the document. But according to Konrad Schüller, the Warsaw correspondent of Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, Poland has gained quite a number of points in the declaration.
It has gained a reference to the openness of the European project, a reference to the principle of European solidarity, which can mean economic solidarity, but also solidarity in the sense of security. It has gained a reference to the contribution of Eastern European states to the reunification of the continent, which is important because Poland has always been fearing that it might be treated as a sort of lesser cousin in the European Union. Now that there is an open reference to Poland's and other countries' contribution, this upgrades the status of the new members of the European Union. So there are a number of points in the Berlin Declaration in which Poland has achieved something.
During the recent Polish-German summit, President Lech Kaczyński agreed that the existing text of the Constitutional Treaty can serve as a basis for future debate. This is a significant change of his previous position, which boiled down to the treaty should be written from scratch. Most observers of the Polish scene claim, however, that Poland will spare no effort in opposing the voting system proposed in the current draft, a system that would dilute the influence of small and medium-sized countries such as Poland in the European Union. I'm Michał Kubicki in Warsaw for Insight Central Europe.
Thanks, Michał. Undoubtedly, one of the achievements of the EU is its common currency, the euro. The newest member of the eurozone is Slovenia. It took up the currency on the 1st of January this year. Slovenes suspect some businesses have used confusion over exchange rates to put prices up. And the Consumer Protection Office in Slovenia has found the services sector is the worst offender. Ksenija Samadzija-Matul has more from Maribor.
Price monitoring suggests what official consumer price statistics have shown. There were more price increases following the adoption of the euro among providers of services than among retailers. According to its own basket of goods, the Consumer Protection Office found that 25% of the goods were cheaper, 39% remained unchanged, and 36% went up in price. But what do consumers in Slovenia think about the changes in prices? This young woman says,
I think the prices have risen a little bit, mostly, maybe not so much in the supermarkets, but for example, gas bills, electricity bills, also restaurants. For example, if you go out, the food and the drinks are quite more expensive, I think, than they used to be. And also maintenance bills for example, houses, buildings. This has also risen, definitely.
According to the Consumer Protection Office, there was a marked difference between prices of goods and services. The prices of only 35% of goods went up, while 50% of services were more expensive in the period between February 2006 and February 2007. While the price of many a service has gone up, food in Slovenia is by general cheaper. However, not everyone in Slovenia seems to make the same experience, as a statement of this woman shows. I think that the price for electricity, petrol and fuel oil have not gone up that much. I think that the companies somehow had to stick to exchange rates from Slovene tolar to euro. But I think that prices have risen with smaller things or smaller private shops, markets. I believe that it is necessary to go to several supermarkets and shops in order to compare prices. It is also a fact that we still cannot fully grasp how much a euro is actually worth. We still look for the prices in Slovenian tolars, and I think that this will go on for a while. In its latest blacklist of unwarranted price hikes, the office includes bars and restaurants, driving schools, hairdressers, car washes, and providers of sports, cultural, and health services. The Consumer Protection Office will push ahead with the Price Watch project, especially since the 12 euro members that adopted the single currency before Slovenia witnessed a second wave of price increases several months after the adoption of the currency. For Insight Central Europe, this is Ksenija Samardzija-Matul.
Thanks, Ksenija. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Insight Central Europe is a co-production from Polish Radio External Service, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, and Radio Slovenia International. In Hungary, a new survey says almost every third person would deny refugees entry into the country, regardless of their status of persecution, country of origin, or color of skin. The results of the opinion poll have sparked a debate over xenophobia among Hungarians. Sándor Lajko of Radio Budapest spoke to the sociologist Andrei Sik, the head of the project at the polling organization TAKI. He says the results are not surprising.
Since 2005, there is almost no change in the level of open xenophobia. As far as the long-term trend is concerned, between the early 90s and the mid-2000 years, there was a sharp rise of the level of xenophobia. At the very beginning, about 19% of the population chose the xenophobic alternative, while around 95 and in the early 2000s, there were 2 years where 44% of the population chose identically. So this year, this 27% is, I would say, more or less the average.
Are there differences as to what nationalities Hungarians dislike, or is this a uniform xenophobia?
This is a policy-oriented question. We consider openly xenophobic only those who would reject everyone, every asylum seeker, irrespective of their background, their ethnic background, their age, their claims, whatever. From those, approximately two-thirds of the entire sample who answer, we are politician. Answer, meaning that it depends on who the asylum seeker is. From them, we ask a second question regarding certain ethnic groups, whether they would be ready to give asylum for those who are belonging to those ethnic groups. And in this respect, we ask Arabs, Romanians, Russians, and Chinese, and Hungarians across the border, living in the neighboring countries.
And who they would accept and who they not?
They wouldn't accept any other nationality except the Hungarians across the border. Not even these fictitious Pires and
Pires people. Why was it necessary to invent a non-existing?
Because our idea was that if we use this fictitious ethnicity, then in a way we can do the research in a sort of laboratory context, because obviously none of the respondents have any personal experience, good or bad, with a non-existing ethnicity. There is no historical past of the relation between Hungarians and Piresians. So if the Hungarian respondent reject Piresian, then the Hungarian respondent does it on the basis of pure xenophobia, and that's what we were interested in.
Andrei Sik from the research organization TAKI. The process of officially registering a church in Slovakia has always been complicated, but it's about to become even more so. The left-wing government of Robert Fico has decided to support a proposal requiring that new churches or regional organizations in Slovakia gather more than 20,000 signatures from adult members of the church if they want to be officially registered. Current legislation requires the same amount of signatures, but only from church sympathizers. Michal Groch reports.
The amendment to the law on freedom of religion and church position were submitted in the parliament by MPs Ludmila Muškova from the Movement for Democratic Slovakia and Jan Podmanický from the Smer Social Democracy.
We have noticed recently an increasing number of groups trying to form a religion just for fun. Legislature hasn't been clear enough to prevent such groups from finding a hole in it.
Said Jan Podmanický from Smer Social Democracy. Therefore, the amendment should to some extent prevent the registration of subjects which would abuse the position and rights following the official registration. The Ministry of Culture has supported the legislature change, stating that, quote, the registration process has recently showed some limitations, the end of the quote. Major churches in Slovakia obviously do not have any objections against the amendment to the law. Miloš Klatík from the Protestant Church confirms.
We have basically no objections.
Jozef Kovačík, representing the Catholic Church, responded similarly.
The Church views it as fully legitimate action of the government and parliament.
Registered churches can apply for financial support from the state to use for religious representatives and running costs for the church. They can also ask to be relieved from paying local taxes, exceptions from the labor code, teach their religion at the state schools, create church schools, or have some space in the state-owned media. Culture Minister Marek Magyarics points out to the fact that registration is not related to the possibility of acting like church or religious organization, but it is connected with the advantages the official registration brings.
This amendment to the law does not limit the freedom of religion or ability to set up religious organizations. It is only about the benefits that are available for any officially registered religious movement.
Since 1992, only two religious organizations have been registered in Slovakia: Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. The EU does not have common legislature in registration of new churches. The growing Muslim community in Slovakia is concerned because it will probably not be able to collect 20,000 signatures. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs in its 2005 report stated that criteria for registration in Slovakia are among the strictest in Europe and can be compared to those applied in the countries of Central Asia. The current legislature has already been attacked at the Constitutional Court by the Attorney General Dobroslav Trnka, who claimed that it limits the constitutional right to assemble. Therefore, it is questionable whether the new amendment to the law is pointed in the right direction.
Mihailo reporting. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope, all one word, .com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Polish Radio External Service, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague, and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. Join me and the rest of the team next week.